springtime.
Springtime. That's right.
Drive into springtime?
Drive into springtime. Yes. Which I believe, according to him on his little interview program, this is something of a flashback sequence, I think.
Well, it's a virtual reality thing, I think, right? Like, isn't he able to experience his past romances?
What does he say? Like,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of a Philip K. Dick type thing. Yeah, he says the chronology is sometimes interrupted by explosions from the past, specifically the song Springtime, which concerns an amusement park that he, the narrator, I guess, stops at along the way, which is the amusement park is called Springtime. The introduction is the exposition, and it tells you that there's this place called Springtime that's the most popular place along the funway. In this place, they scan your brain for the memories of your early romances and then play it back to you in some magnificent virtual theater.
and Springtime is located in Laughing Pines.
That's right, along the funway. Now you're getting a picture of the geography of.
I guess that's helpful. Lake Nostalgia, Laughing Pines, Springtime is the park, and then there's
the fun way, of course.
And then it is like Philip K. Dick. It's like that thing in what's the
Total Recall.
There's Total Recall, and then isn't Minority Report him too?
Yeah, but Minority Report is like predicting the future.
Yeah, but there's a scene where there's like past. There's like a club in Minority Report where you can like go into a pod and like kind of get with whoever you want. It's like a sex club, but it's like whatever.
No, you're right. That exists, and yeah, it is that. I mean, it's very Philip K. Dick. It's also the song shifts when he describes it. It's this like slow ballad, and then when it like takes off, it kind of kicks back into Trans Island Skyway mode of being like this kind of fun, bouncy song. It's like yowie, it's Connie Lee. Like,
yowie, it's
Connie. now he's in the in the VR or whatever.
he's in the fuck goggles.
Yeah,
he's got his fuck goggles on.
Except you might not be. Maybe he's not actually experiencing carnal pleasure. It's more just like the chill down his spine when he presented a rose.
It is pretty funny, yeah, because what he describes, yowie, it's Connie Lee at the wheel of her Shark DeVille, presumably this universe's Coupe DeVille. We're cruising at about 1,000 miles an hour, but the car is standing still. So good to hear that crazy laugh, to hear her whisper, hold me tight, to learn to love all over again. So he is in the fuck goggles, right, remembering this formative young romance, but he's basically just like driving around in a Cadillac with his sweetie baby eating french fries and milkshakes.
Yes, or perhaps he's not driving around. They're parked at makeout point. Or
he said we're cruising at about 1,000 miles
but
an hour.
But the car is standing still, Ian.
Well, yeah.
He's saying that he feels an emotional rush. He feels his skin, he has goosebumps.
Mm.
But they're standing still. He's just enraptured.
I love that so much of this song, lyrically speaking, is literally just like him directing you. It's like several verses are just devoted to directions. Swing out to Lake Nostalgia, Route 5 to Laughing Pines, get off at Funway West, drive into Springtime.
Yeah. Very expository.
Yeah.
Compared to his usual approach, I guess. Yeah, because each verse is a different, I think, is a different memory or whatever, right?
Like, that's right, yeah. He's got
the first one, the Connie Lee. And yep. Then the Easter break 66 is the second one.
Way back, in 66. and then the smokehouse in the sand. I like to imagine that that's the smokehouse in old Burbank there, but I guess it probably isn't because it's the smokehouse in the sand. That's where he's hiking downtown to Avenue A like we own the street. I'm very confused about the timing and all of this. I guess what you said, it's supposed to take place around 2000, right, Alex?
That's what he said, I think, in one of his interviews, that it was like 5 to 10 years, it was the turn of the millennium. So.
Right. So Easter break 66 with Mad Mona, you're maybe, I guess this is a person around Donald Fagen's age then, right? Because he was born early 40s, right?
Yeah, or late 40s, yeah.
Late 40s, yeah. So he would have been 18, 20 years old or something then. So he's, you know, 60 years old, 55 years old around the time this is taking place. There's a lot to keep track of here on this record.
Bacon gospel candy. It was a radical year. We get a little silly and fall into microspace. It's even better this time around with Coltrane on the KLH. This is the most Donald Fagen fantasy like thing ever. Like, it's just everything.
It is
kind of went back
specific.
To Nightfly here, I guess.
It's so specific. I mean,
it's like Nightfly, but with a further level of just like psycho sci-fi bullshit, because you need to go through this, you know, memory chip device to even get back to the Nightfly in the first place.
It's it's meta Nightfly. That is kind of the achievement here, is that it takes the fictional world that's presented to you in the Nightfly as having been concocted in the imagination of an adolescent, and then it takes it as real. But it also, now you're within that world and you're thinking about the real world that existed before. And it only is going to actually move you emotionally if you are literally Donald Fagen. But otherwise, it's pretty catchy.
This is not for beginners. I do want to caution everyone out there. This, you know, you need to have your intermediate, you know, the Donald Fagen 101, Donald Fagen 201 courses. Those need to be passed and on your transcript with high grades if you're going to try to take on Kamikirad. Honestly, you know, I feel like 11 Tracks of Whack, you know, we kind of talked about and often has this reputation as like really the deep of the deep. And in some ways it is, but that record to me is so much more immediate and like easy to appreciate for, you know, your average Dan head than Kamikiriad. I don't know. This is like really out there kind of shit.
Yeah. Well, I guess musically, maybe it's more similar to like Nightfly and Steely Dan, but yeah, in terms of this, like, well, even that though, because the production is so different.
Right.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, it's really interesting that they took that really long break, then decided they were doing a Steely Dan reunion, and then put out these two albums.
They did a Steely Dan reunion by making their own solo records.
It's because he'll never do he never does the easy thing. He never does the expected thing. Like, he'll always, like, he can't do it. Like, he always has to throw, like, some curveballs at you when he's, you know, working on a new creative venture.
Right.
But maybe that was, for them, the easier thing to do. Like, at that moment, maybe... Hmm. Jumping into a full-fledged Steely Dan reunion would have been kind of a big ask of them, and in fact the simpler or the more enjoyable, softer entry back into that world was maybe something more specific. It was like whatever happened to be on their mind, just to get them back into the groove of working. And then after that, it seems like, you know, then they're ready to kind of commingle and make these songs and these albums that are a little bit more a little less specific to them.
It was maybe a lower stakes way, I think, of re-entering into a creative partnership together, you know, appearing on each other's records, producing together, you know, doing your own, you know, kind of doing a Steely Dan record again, but it's not a Steely Dan record by name, right? It's a Donald Fagen record. It's a Walter Becker record, which are going to just be less attractive, less notable, just based on the fact that they're not attached to the Steely Dan name. And then at the same time, reforming the Steely Dan band, getting out on the road, playing all the hits, and then ultimately you work your way up to Two Against Nature, which is, what, 6-7 years after this, right? Because, that was 2000.
Yeah, not to mention they'd spent 10 years apart from each other, and, you know, right, they probably had all that material just, you know, that they'd been working on. So it had to culminate in something, and it wasn't going to be a Steely Dan album because they were just, you know, most, you know, Walter was living in Hawaii, you know, for the entire time. So I doubt Donald was going out there too often, but...